Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's good to have you back with us after the three-day weekend. Hopefully a great time with you and yours. The weather finally broke. I really hate that expression. We needed it. We did when it came to the rain, no doubt. All day yesterday, all day today. It's just been a monsoon-like, but absolutely. It's good to see some green coming back around the neighborhood. I mean, we just went through a massive drought. So anyway, a little bit of wet, not the worst thing that can happen. At least, you know, it was a long time coming. All right, final week of May. My name is Rick Ballew. This is Into the Night. We do it late on Tuesday. We love it. We love it late night on Tuesday. We feel a little bit around here that we get away with some stuff late night on Tuesday. That's kind of the rub, right, RJ Saunders? I mean, it's just kind of like you and I, a little wink, a little nudge that on Tuesday nights we get away with a little something.
Especially because we're the only ones in here.
Oh, I know.
Gets crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll be with you tomorrow at 7, and the rest of the week, Thursday, Friday, and then again Monday at 6. But you know, this is late night. We're blessed by the helmets and heels and the ladies there. And then, you know, we come in after the fact and just get ready to roll deep into the night. And, you know, this is it for May. We're going to say goodbye this week. I thought this week and the three-day weekend, and again today, has been incredibly promising. I mean, you just look at the landscape and what's happening, the language coming out of the National Hockey League. We're talking about these four-team round robins. We're talking about 40 or 24 teams getting ready to start a playoff session, okay? The NHL did announce a return to play. Now, like everything else in life, there's some serious crossing of the T's and dotting of the I's. You have to have an agreement here between the NHL and the National Hockey League Players Association. It also appears that they will push back the start date for the 2021 season, which I think we're okay with. Get it done, get it right. Obviously, testing is the biggest concern. Where are they going to have these games? How are you going to seed these particular pods? Again, you're going to have six of them. And four teams per, 24 teams going after Lord's Stanley Cup. I love it. Language there today. Baseball, a little bit hesitant. They're fighting. Yeah, I'm your biggest baseball fan. I am. And you break me down, I'm going to spill baseball. I'm a baseball purist, and yes, that includes the designated hitter, because including, you know, in my entire lifetime, where I was able to comprehend, the designated hitter has been alive and well since the days of Danny Cater. Okay? RJ Saunders, how many radio shows do you think today across the country Danny Cater was mentioned?
What is one?
Do you realize that the Boston Red Sox gave up Cy Young Award winner Sparky Lyle to get Danny Cater in a trade between the Red Sox and the Yankees, something that almost never happens.
A trade between the Red Sox and the Yankees?
Yes.
Oh, I believe it.
70s. And Sparky Lyle went on to be phenomenal. And, of course, ended up winning the Cy Young as a relief artist. And, of course, wrote The Bronx Zoo, one of the greatest baseball books ever written. And I recommend that you read that. So baseball's, and this is just isn't going to be good. You know, every once in a while I feel like I'm a defense lawyer when it comes to protecting the great game. And, you know, it was Chipper who said it over the weekend. And Chipper's been all over the place on social media. He made himself seen during the match that was played on Sunday, which I'll get to here momentarily. Absolutely enjoyed that. Thought it was spectacular television. In a situation where we're just begging for live sporting events. But baseball now is going to really cut off the top here. Those who make a tremendous amount of money, they're going to get far less. And it still appears that we're farther away than we are closer. I actually played golf on, what day was it? Saturday, with a Major League Baseball player agent who reps a lot of guys, lives right here in Jacksonville. And his name is Oscar, and he reps a lot of Major League Baseball players, including Gary Sanchez, the very talented catcher for the New York Yankees. He reps a lot of younger guys as well, a couple of former JU players. And we were just going back and forth, you know, his expertise. He's from Puerto Rico, Oscar is, and has had a tremendous amount of success, you know, going into the Dominican Republic and, you know, going to Cuba, going to Puerto Rico, going to Venezuela. Also been able to sign a lot of players here in the United States of America. But, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but we just had a long conversation about how damaging this could be again for this sport. There still are people who never came back from the strike. And, you know, Major League, the NHL, Gary Bettman, when he allowed the NHL to strike, it was probably their worst mistake. Their second worst mistake, in my opinion, was taking themselves off ESPN. ESPN will promote the hell out of their product. And ever since they've left, I think there's a lot of people in general who love sports who just have conveniently ignored the National Hockey League because they work a long day. They get home. They get on the Lazy Boy. They pour themselves a scotch. And then they flip on the TV and you go to ESPN. We're talking about casual sports fans here, not passionate, casual. And you're going to go to ESPN. And if ESPN's got something on that you like, you're going to stay there. Well, with ESPN, had Gary Thorne and Bill Clement, and they were giving you hockey a couple of nights a week, you stuck. A lot of fans are like, wow, cool game. Well, it's gone. And it suffered. It suffered mightily numbers-wise. Okay, in hockey towns, that's different. The original six, that's different. In Canada, that's different. In baseball, the same deal. Never was able to bounce back after the strike. Now, Sosa, McGuire, and all of that, the long ball, that brought some back. But still, there are people to this day that greed killed them as a fan. Can you imagine if they doubled down now, here in the summer of 2020? I mean, I understand the players' point of view. What if someone gets hurt? What if all of a sudden there's a Tommy John surgery and you're a guy that, you know, is not making a tremendous amount of money and you're looking on a huge payday down the road and all of a sudden, bam, you have major problems with the elbow or you have major problems with the shoulder and you are shelved for at least a year. I get that. But that's a small percentage of players who were there. And with everything that Americans have gone through, you know, what is it, 22 plus million who have lost their job and everyone's fighting their way back. The last thing you want to hear about is the blessed, those who have the God-given talent to play Major League Baseball and make a tremendous amount of money, go back and forth and fight with the owners. I mean, the hardworking American people just don't want to hear that right now. And you know what? I understand the side of it. I understand what people are trying to say, but it's not going to sit well. And they are the one percenters. They are in a category that you and I can't imagine. They are so lucky with their God-given ability, but it's just not going to go over. And I think you're going to lose more and more fans. So I really hope baseball can put some serious brain trust together on this thing and go back to the strike years ago and look what happened at the game after and say, let's not make the same mistake now. Hopefully, that'll be the case. The Jaguars opened up their facility today. The building is open at TIAA Bank. Now it's very restricted as far as who can get there. They sent out today really the rules and regulations that are now in place. Everyone there must wear a mask. I guess, again, they're extremely limited as far as the numbers. And as you are well aware, no coaches, no players right now. Now, a little bit later on in the show, I'm going to get into it. Charles Robinson, who I really like as a writer, he is with Yahoo Sports. He today came out and said that the coaches could be in the facilities as early as next week. Immediately thereafter, J.C. Trotter of the National Football League Players Association, he is their president, came out and said absolutely not the case. There are no dates whatsoever on a return. So the National Football League right now is not going to be forced into a corner where they do come out and say, we'll be back on this certain date, and we'll be doing this on this certain date. You read the report by Charles Robinson, it even gets to the point where he talks about the possibility of mini camps in the mid part of June. Can you imagine that? I mean, how incredibly spectacular would that be to find out that you actually did have NFL mini camps in the middle part of June? Again, that was Yahoo Sports and Charles Robinson's report. Obviously, much more could happen, much more could change, good or bad, but it appears that really the good is where we're headed in the NFL. Jay Gruden met the local media today. Had an opportunity to talk with a guy, and one word to use to describe him, business. All business. One particular time, he said it three times in about 15 seconds. He can't wait to get these guys back out on the field. If you haven't heard from Jay Gruden today, I was a part of that. I really enjoyed the conversation. He spoke a lot about DJ Chark. He spoke a lot about moving the wide receivers around, just how effective he think they can be in the slot. And he even mentioned DJ Chark in the slot. Okay, his appreciation and respect for the tight end and the tight end position and how he thinks that's going to be used here in Jacksonville, as well as third down back. So I got some really good things, at least in my opinion today, listening to what Jay Gruden had to say about his opportunity now to take over as the offensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. As a matter of fact, let's begin with that right here on the other side. Let's play you some Jay Gruden. I'll give you my opinion on what I got out of listening to him talk about the Jags offensively today for the first time. Yes, he did speak on Gardner Minshew. I'm going to play that for you as well. If you want to get involved in the program, best way for you to do it right here tonight on a Tuesday, get me on the text line. That is by Lifetime Enclosures, designed by Lifetime Enclosures, 641-1010. You can also get me on Twitter, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL. So let's get things cranked up right here on a Tuesday night. We'll hear from Jay Gruden as we get things started right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Was that John Paul Jones on bass?
I don't know who's on bass, but I do know a good Biggie song when I hear it.
That's Sting?
Biggie.
John Entwistle? I'm talking about on bass.
I don't know who's on bass.
Adam Clayton?
Could be. I'll have to look it up now.
Biggie, East Coast, West Coast. Who killed Biggie? Who killed Tupac? We'll never know.
It's one of the major mysteries that I really want found out.
I know. I mean, we had more music to get, both out of New York and L.A.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What happens if you were rolling down Crenshaw right now playing this? Would you be received okay? Could there be some problems because this is an East Coast take?
I really feel like respect would be shown. I mean, I think Biggie was really turning things around in his life, having a more positive outlook. And I think people on the West Coast were starting to respect him a little bit more and more. But then you had, you know, things go down.
Final thought between Biggie and Tupac. Did the lady who was kind of the liaison between them, Tupac apparently had relations, wrote about it. You think that attributed to either one of the two no longer being here?
I don't know. I'm not going to put Faith Evans out there like that.
Should I give up sports to go into pop culture or what?
I can see you doing it, though. I could see you.
Like
I could
Pat O'Brien did?
Who?
Pat O'Brien. Remember him on CBS?
No.
Michael Jackson goes Thriller, and Rosie O'Donnell makes it through the buffet without actually eating. Join me, Pat O'Brien, later tonight.
I've always wanted to know why the dissing of one Rosie O'Donnell. Now, listen, I'm not a fan of Rosie, but it seems like, you know, anytime you're able to get like a in there, It's Rosie O'Donnell. I've always wanted to know that. Why?
Rosie O'Donnell, my ire for her is because she referred to 9/11 as an inside job.
Conspiracy?
Yes. And I don't, on this show, I don't mix politics with sports. Like I said, I'll mix a little pop culture and this controversy of Tupac and Biggie Smalls and Biggie Smalls and everything that happened there. But in such an awful time for America, she had so much hatred for our office that she referred to 9/11 as an inside job. And that moment right there, I never respect her again for that simple reason.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a fan of Rosie. I didn't know just the beef that you and Rosie had. I mean,
I guess she did it before a taping of The View with like a packed studio audience. They were putting makeup and stuff on her, and she started going crazy. You know, someone was a Bush fan or whatever, and she just started going crazy, saying that 9/11 was something that, he ordered. It was, and I was just like, come on. There's people whose lives have been ruined. Leave the freaking politics out of it. So that's your answer.
Hey, yo, Rosie, you got right? beef over here, man.
That's it. That it's nothing she ever did outside of that. And it goes back to 2001. That's where my dislike is with her. All right, the 0956 says, Baloo, I was a huge baseball fan. Until the strike, then I'm just now I'm just a casual fan. Exactly what you said. I was a kid, and I thought they were too greedy, and I never saw the league the same after. I hate seeing this, but I understand that it's relative. It's part of the equation today. There's too many other options. There's too many other things to do. People again are suffering right now. They're fighting their way back. They've lost loved ones. They've lost their job. They've lost their business. You don't want to hear about millionaires fighting billionaires. And I understand the side of the Major League Baseball Players Association and their union. They are incredibly tough, but you just don't want to hear about that right now. And you're going to lose more and more and more fans. Now, listen, there are markets that regardless of the set of circumstances, they'll come back. My hometown in Boston, they'll come back as long as they win. Okay, New York, Philly, Chicago, St. Louis, there are great cities all across America where they are going to come back. But what about some of these other franchises? And what's it going to be like down the road in St. Pete? What's it going to be like down the road in Miami? The Braves going in were projected to certainly battle and possibly win their division, after what the Nats just did. Atlanta was supposed to be part of a rebuilding process over the last couple of years. And, the Braves have actually been ahead of the curve with these young players. The Atlanta Braves have a real good chance to be something special here over this next period of, let's say, 3 to 5, 7 years. Absolutely. But how are they going to react in that city? I don't know. Atlanta's always been a little bit of a fickle sports town. And other places where, they're not winning. It's going to be very challenging, in my opinion. So hopefully baseball does not make that mistake. And we'll continue to keep you updated on that. All right, I want to get to Jay Gruden because he met with the media a little bit earlier today. You know the history of Jay Gruden. Okay, he's the brother of John. Had a lot of success in arena football. Put up very good numbers as an offensive coordinator in Cincinnati. John Kitna, in Cincinnati, and I should say Andy Dalton. Kitna, obviously his son, committed verbally at least today to the Florida Gators. But yes, Andy Dalton doing some good, very good things there, then becoming the lead man in D.C., where there's always, a certain set of consequences you got to deal with when your owner is Daniel Snyder. You got the feeling that he didn't love a young quarterback when it came to Haskins a year ago. Okay, he was fired after week 5. He just didn't feel he was ready. I don't think there's any question about that. Well, today, Jay Gruden, now who is the offensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars was asked about what he has seen so far as he's gone back and looked at tape on Jaguars quarterback Gardner Minshew.
Playing in the National Football League is about taking advantage of your opportunities, and Gardner did that. He's a shining reason why once that opportunity presents itself, you take advantage of it, and he did that. And that's, he's put himself in a great position to take the Jacksonville Jaguars and lead them into the future here. And he's shown a skill set where he can sit in the pocket, step up, make things happen outside the pocket. He's accurate. He's tough. And obviously he's a great leader. So he's got the intangibles you want at the quarterback. Now it's just got to get to know the team, got to get to know the offense a little bit, or we all gel together.
Yeah, and he said that several times throughout his conference today via Zoom, that everyone is talking about getting him on the grass. Everyone is talking about getting him out there and practicing. But that came up again and again and again for Jay Gruden. I'm not putting words in his mouth either, but I really got out of the conversation today that this man, perhaps more than any that I've heard from so far, just can't wait to get out on the field. And I'm sure it's been hard for him because he's had a longer break, an extended break. I mean, I believe he was fired after week five. So, you know, you add to that the bye, you're talking about 12 weeks of the regular season that you're off. And then you're talking about a long postseason. And obviously he was hired in January. The Jags waited a little bit to make their moves, if you remember. They were not, they were patient, I guess is the word that I will use, with the, you know, the changes that they made offensively at both quarterback coach and offensive coordinator. It took them a little bit of time. So I'm sure Jay Gruden is one of these guys now that has just had enough of sitting around, watching film, watching games, breaking down tape. He wants to get out on the practice field. All right, the Jaguars offense. We've heard about his West Coast principles. We've been told that he has a quarterback-friendly offense. It is extremely articulate. It has been known as an offense that, you know, getting rid of the football early, a lot of short stuff, loves the backs, loves the wide receivers in the slot. Certainly loves the tight end position. Let's hear from Jay Gruden. This is the way that he described his offense when he was asked about it earlier today and kind of comparing that to what he has recently seen by the Jaguars on film.
I don't have a lot of information as far as how these guys can handle different positions and how to run different routes and all that stuff. I know DD played in the slot. We drafted LaVisca. We'll see what he can do outside and inside. I'd like to move some of the other receivers around a little bit, Chris and DJ, and see what happens. And then, you know, you get Chris Thompson for some of the backfield stuff, but seeing Q and obviously Leonard do some stuff out of the backfield just to get to know everybody. And they get Tyler Eifert back in the mix and moving him around and seeing where Josh Oliver's at and James. And it's just trying to – we got to get these guys on the field. I think from a knowledge standpoint, they'll know the plays and the concepts, but then – getting them out there and seeing them execute it and versus different looks and finding out what they're good at so we can best utilize their skill set. We got to get out on the field soon.
Yeah. I told you. I mean, he said it three times. You could almost feel it. It's like, what, you know, out of respect for everything that's going on, but, you know, his feeling is, let's get her done. You know, let's get out there. Let's start playing some football. And, yeah, that's been consistent. I got that from Chris Thompson when we talked with him last week. I got that from Taylor Eifert when we talked with him 2 weeks ago. This has got to be just, I can't imagine what it's like. I mean, listen, we've all been affected one way or another through this pandemic. Some of us work from home. Some of us didn't work at all. Very few of us were lucky to come in and continue working as is, like us here at 1010XL and 92.5 FM. But, I mean, when you get to the football stuff, this is a game that you have to be out there working. Too much classroom stuff, I would have to think, is driving them crazy. And I don't know if they'll ever say that, because there's a tremendous amount of work in the classroom once mini camps and training camp gets underway. But that's always kind of a downtime. I mean, you're out sweating. It's 95. It's 100-plus degrees on the field. You're in that hot sun here in North Florida, and it is nasty outside. You know, you get a nice cool shower and a couple of Gatorades, and you're chilling with some film study or some classwork study. It's almost like refreshing at that particular time. But, you know, pulling up the Zoom every day and trying to figure out what your responsibility is, either offensively or defensively, day after day, hour after hour, and then you shut it down, and the respect in the initiative is thrown on you individually to go work out, no matter where it is that you are or where it is that you can go. I mean, it's different for each and everyone out there. Some are doing it here. Some are doing it in other parts throughout the country. Most are doing it by themselves. Maybe others are throwing the football. We're going to hear from Gardner Minshew, I'm told, on Thursday. So, you know, I'm very interested in hearing from Gardner. We saw the video on him last week. He looked thicker, yet still with the agility. And I know he's been working at a camp. I still never found out for sure, but I believe that workout was filmed in Mobile, Alabama. We've seen Roethlisberger throwing. We've seen Tom Brady throwing. I mean, yeah, right now I want to hear that Gardner Minshew's throwing the football to DJ Chark and throwing the football to D.D. Westbrook. And, you know, Chenault the rookie's coming in. He's throwing it to him. And Chris Thompson's coming in there. And that's what I want to hear. I'm sure that's what Doug Marrone and Jay Gruden want to hear. But as of right now, we don't have any knowledge on that, and I don't know if we will. Again, we're expected to hear from Gardner Minshew on Thursday morning. So, you know, hopefully in a couple of days, it's actually Tuesday night now. Hey, it's going to be here before you know it. We'll get a pretty good understanding to that, because that's where leaders are. And, you know, Minshew's been kind of thrown into this leadership in only his second year due to a lot of attrition and due to the fact that, as a rookie, he led him to a 6-6 record. And there is not an enormous amount of leadership on that offense. So they're going to be looking at him as a guy with 12 career starts and just turned 24 years of age as a bona fide leader of this football team. It's all on him. Anyway, more coming up here on Jay Gruden. If you have anything that you'd like to ask involved in offense or anything that came out of today's conversation, I'll be more than happy to answer that. Best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter, Baloo1010XL, or get us again on the text line, which is designed by Lifetime Enclosures, and the phone number there is 641-1010. So more coming up with Jay Gruden. Again, our first opportunity today to meet with the new offensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll stay with that. I'm Rick Baloo. This is 1010XL in 92.5 FM.
Into the night with Rick Baloo on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Jalen Ramsey's preaching in Los Angeles, saying all the right things. No matter if you don't have a deal, he knows what he's up to. He knows what the team is up to. He's going to report on time. Talked with a buddy of mine the other day who's close to someone who's close to Jalen. And I said, I bet he ends up being miserable in Los Angeles. He said, nope. Jalen loves it there. He wants to re-sign there. And I was kind of stung. It's like a Tyson right, you know, straight to the kisser. I was like, you know, what he did to the city, what he did to the team, what he did to the fan base, and then, you know, you find out that he's happy. I don't wish ill on anyone. I really don't. But I find it hard to believe that he is a happy man right now. There's just something about that guy that, I think he's going to go through life feeling as if he's owed more. And that's just my opinion on him. And I've had that conversation with some others who are pretty close to the football team. You know, some people are wired that way. You know, and even if he does get paid, there'll be some other issue. It's kind of a shame with his ability and his talent. But, man, I know that's got to burn a little bit here in town. Although with Jalen, there are – I think there's a large contingency of Jaguar fans who literally have turned the page, have said, you know, two first-rouners in return, a third-rounder in return. And, you know, the guy was being a baby. The guy did everything he could to force himself out. So be it. And, you know, I still don't get his scorned lover approach. He's the one who set up the divorce. He's the one that demanded the trade. Yet whenever there is a Calais or A.J. Boye or Nick Foles, I don't know if he commented on Foles, but, you know, anything with Jan related, and we have breaking news on Jan, which we'll get to in about 30 seconds, Jalen's always responding. You know, whenever there's a divorce, there's always the lead, right? There's always the he, the she who wanted out. And typically the person who wants out would be the one that you would least expect to stab the knife in the back after the fact or to continue to discuss or point out this or point out that if you got what you wanted. But Jalen has always taken that approach. A lot of see, I told y'all, or laughing or whatever. It's frankly, it's below himself. Yeah, but he's done it anyway. What did Giannis tweet out? You were telling me here during the break, the latest on Yannick Ngakoue, who really went underground for like a month or so, but he exploded. I think it was late last week, either Thursday or Friday, with like five tweets in a short period of time, and he is now tweeted again.
Jan, what are you trying to say? As of 42 minutes ago, Yannick Ngakoue tweets out, due time. Due time.
Is that like Beretta, don't do the crime if you can't do the time?
I don't know with this guy, man. Like, okay, May 24th, life is short, so live it. May 24th, 333. Then May 23rd, he tweeted two more times, PG made me.
Okay.
And stay down. Don't fold. The game tests you.
Yeah. I'm lost on a lot of those tweets. So, no, and that's the latest there. I still think he's going to play for the Jags this year. I do. I really believe that. You know, Jacksonville's losing leverage now. I mean, all you got to do is go back and look at the Jadeveon Clowney deal. You're not going to get nearly as much in return. As we pointed out, you look at the Frank Clark deal, you look at the D Ford deal and how they happened before the draft, and of course going back to 2019, and the capital that they returned compared to the Clowney trade. And Clowney's still out there. Now, there are some pass rushers out there. So we'll see. Still believe, you know, play them, and if the Jags aren't winning games, that, you know, before the trade deadline is probably the best opportunity for this franchise to move him, and who knows, maybe they could get a first-round pick. If you think you're a playoff team, a deep playoff team, and you're projected to be selecting, let's say, somewhere from, you know, 24th, 25th to 32nd, that you think you're going deeper in. And remember, you're going to have to win another round this year because there's only going to be one bye. Unlike the way it's been forever around these parts, where you have two byes in the AFC, you have two byes in the NFC with the new collective bargaining agreement, we're going to add a couple of playoff teams and just one overall bye. So that means you're going to have to win an extra game. But if you think you're there and you're a pass rusher short, you may give up a first rounder to get him for the remainder of the season. Now, that whole deal about whether or not you can re-sign him, you don't want it to be a Clowney deal like Seattle's going through right now. You want to know that you can keep him the way that, you know, Dee Ford stayed in San Fran and Frank Clark obviously stayed in Kansas City. That's the difference there between the three. So anyway, we'll keep you updated. All right, I want to play what Jay Gruden said today about DJ Chark. I thought this was very interesting. And again, you can kind of see the wheels spinning here for Jay Gruden when he talked about how excited he is about working with this third-year wide receiver. Here's Jay Gruden meeting with the media earlier today, talking about the Jaguars wide receiver.
Well, I think that he's playing with a load of confidence right now, and that is very exciting because he's got a skill set with the size, speed, to be able to come in and out of cuts. I think we can do a little bit more with him. I'd like to get him inside a little bit, do some more things with him in the slot. But he's an excellent specimen, and the thing that I've got to know about DJ in the little limited time I got to meet him is he's hungry. He wants to be great, and when you have the athletic qualities that he has, and then a desire to be great. He's going to have a very bright future. Now it's just our job to get him acclimated to this offense and get him comfortable, or you go out there and play fast because he's a big, strong, fast, hungry kid, and we got to get him the ball.
Kind of love the idea of moving these wide receivers all around. Again, it's going to be harder to do without on-field practice. I still believe it's going to have to be dumbed down because of the lack of preparation on-field. But I like the idea anyway. Whether we go back to Hackett or we go to DeFilippo, I just thought the offense the last couple of years was way too flat. Thought it was way too predictable. I thought last year's offense, you could tell, ran through Leonard Fournette. A lot of things you can do with DJ Chark. Love hearing that. Lining him up in the slot, moving some guys around. I mean, I've got to believe that Jay Gruden is loving the fact that he has Chenault on this roster. Because Gruden is a guy who loves to run a lot of counters. And he has got that written all over him. You know, find a way to get him the football. Hand it to him on a reverse. See what this man can do. And, you know, flipping around wide receivers, mixing them up, split end, flanker, slot, doing all sorts of different things, what that does is it creates a problem for the defenses that you're facing. Defensive coordinators and the personnel on the football field, when you're mixing things up like that all the time, it's going to force them to change what they're doing. Maybe, you know, you're taking on an opponent, the number one corner may be set up where I have DJ Chark today. No matter where he goes, I'm with him. Well, what if you're lining him up in the slot? Okay, and he's just a few feet off the tight end. And, you know, on one side you have Chenault. And then on the other side you got Keelan Cole. Guys who can run. It just changes the way that you think. And, you know, maybe you're running a one-back offense and you have Chris Thompson there. And again, you look at what Fournette did a year ago with 76 receptions. It's a very good deal, but it seemed like everything that he did was just the soft little screen, looking for a seam, and he was a dump-down valve. I really get the feeling now that with Jay Gruden, you're going to see routes by Chris Thomas. You're actually going to see him, you know, cross the line of scrimmage and run some routes in that hopefully soft underbelly of the defense where – I would love to know, out of the 76 balls that Fournette caught, how many of those 76 were actually received behind the line of scrimmage, if you understand what I'm trying to get at here. I see more of a, you know, north-south passing style, short style, and that includes the running back. Now, they will go lateral on you. They will go east and west. I just mentioned a moment ago how he loves the whole counter game, how he loves the whole reverse game. So I think that there's a possibility of all that coming up as well. All right, let's wrap things up with Jay Gruden. Let's go to the final cut here. And again, I like this because you can feel it, at least I could, about how he really wishes that he was on the field and how doing this via Zoom and conference call all the time, just how difficult this adjustment has been for him so far here in Jacksonville?
Individual time with their coaches. You know, I haven't done any group install meetings trying to get 40 guys on one line at one time where I have a picture of me and I'm going over plays. I've tried to break it up where these coaches can teach the system, because it's the first time they're teaching our system as well. So it's good for them to teach it and work with their guys. You know, Coach Trubisky with the running backs, and Coach McCardell with the receivers, and Coach Middleton with the tight ends, Coach Mackey with the quarterback, and I'm able to go in and out. And obviously Coach Warhop with the linemen, for them to really hone in on their positions and what their task is. Then we come together, we'll do more group installs and obviously the walkthroughs and the practices, and I think it'll be more beneficial that way. That's probably the biggest difference. This time we would have more group activity if it was a normal year. Obviously it's not a normal year, so we're doing more individual stuff and trying to hone in on the individual position.
There you have it, Jay Gruden today, his first opportunity to get with the local media here in Jacksonville. And that overall, it was very interesting to hear from Jay Gruden. That whole red zone production a year ago was not good for the Jags. You know, we know they only had 3 rushing touchdowns all year, which is a massive disappointment. I mean, there was a record-setting more than 400 rushing touchdowns during the 2019 season, and the Jaguars added 3 to that list. And they were not good when it came to running the football in the red zone, and they were not good overall. They were 19 of 47 as far as touchdowns once they made it inside the 20. Okay, that is a 40.4% success rate. That is terrible. You look back at some of the numbers that Gruden has had in Cincinnati, as well as in D.C., much, much better than that. So, hey, the Jags have maybe the best kicker on the planet, okay, and Josh Lambeau, and you feel confident that whenever a situation comes up, he's going to get you to 3, but you're not going to win games when you're getting 3s. Jaguars averaged, 18.8 points a game last year, 26th in the NFL. It's tough to win a lot of games when you're averaging less than 19 points. You got to score more. You got to get better in the red zone, and you got to find ways to score touchdowns. And hopefully that's what Jay Gruden's going to be able to install here offensively with the Jaguars. All right, when we come back, we got more on the Jags this hour. A couple of things I'm going to throw out to you. I want to get to the match. Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. So we have all that to do. Let's get ready for hour number 2 with Rick Ballew on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, the match was a hit. Record-setting numbers made for TV. Raised more than $20 million. Got to see their personalities a little bit, which is kind of cool. Peyton Manning, very comical. Tom Brady, more, you know, kind of the straight guy, but he began to get a little sideways on us after he holed out on, I believe, number 7. Mickelson, very entertaining. I love just how what he sees on the golf course. And when he shares that with us, that was kind of cool. You know, Tiger pretty reserved. That's just Tiger. But, man, he's changed immensely from the young man that we saw explode on the scene. I mean, he's got a different way about him now. It's like he enjoys everything that is out there, and he fully gets it. I kind of love the you know, second Tiger, because he still has that burning desire to win. He's never given that up. I just think he enjoys people more now than he once did. But boy, his game looked good. Of course, very familiar with that golf course, the Medalist, from, you know, the whole ongoing saga, what happened with Greg Norman, that course originally, you know, Pete Dye, Greg Norman put it together. There was a falling out, and now it's considered Tiger's course with the Tiger's tees. But I just loved what we had a chance to watch. It was pretty cool. The rain made it even more challenging, and, boy, they were able to go pin hunting. really go for the sticks. Peyton Manning was really, really good on those par threes. But I just enjoyed it. And, you know, I hope we get more of this. It was done for the right cause, $20 million to COVID-19 relief. I see now that there's more of this talk that Mike Tyson may fight Evander Holyfield. And, again, it would be a bout that would be out there, you know, as an exhibition fight to raise money. I saw a story today where Tyson Fury said that he was contacted about fighting Mike Tyson, but nothing ever came out of it. I mean, come on now. Tyson Fury is 31. Mike Tyson is 53. We don't want to see anything like that. Let's not get crazy here. I mean, after what Tyson Fury just did to Deontay Wilder in a very entertaining fight, but just a big physical bruising puncher who really worked the body, we don't want to see that. And would you want to see that? Tyson Fury, Mike Tyson? I mean, you got a 22-year age difference between them.
I don't want to see it. However, I don't know too many people that want to step in front of Iron Mike after that video that surfaced
right,
of him hitting the pads. Rick, man was moving, and he was hitting.
He was, and I'd watch it, but I don't want to see it. I would much rather see an exhibition fight with him and Evander or something like that where there's headgear. You know, I mean, come on. Sooner or later, you're going to keep getting popped. And you're going to have a few screws loose. Evander Holyfield, sadly, it's kind of hard to listen to him now. I remember interviewing him years and years and years ago, several times, and he was always quick-witted, always, you know, a fun man to talk to. But he has just been, you know, he's been hit too many times. Sooner or later, your brains, man, you just can't take that constant pounding. Being smacked. You talk about CTE, and we get into that all the time in the world of the National Football League. No, I don't want to see Tyson Fury, Mike Tyson. I don't. I'd like to see Tyson Fury fight Deontay Wilder again. That I could go for. A trilogy.
Do we really want to see that?
Yeah. What's better? What do we have that's better?
I mean, I don't know, but it just feels like I don't know if Vegas is really going to try to give Wilder back the title or if Wilder has anything to where he's going to come out the box with something we've never seen before to defeat Tyson Fury. I just don't know. I thought Wilder lost the first fight, lost the second fight. I just don't know what he's going to come up with that would be different in a trilogy fight.
It's about the money, though. He's going to get paid. The pay-per-views will sell. You know, split decision, as you pointed out, you thought Wilder lost it first time out. Of course, he was knocked out second time out. He just, you know, this that whole excuse about his outfit and how he sweated out. And you know, that was so ridiculous to see what do you have, 25 pounds worth of armor on or whatever? And he just exhausted himself in the dead heat before the fight. I guess he had it on a very long time before the fight.
Why not do what Iron Mike used to do? Just come in the cutoff tee.
Oh, yeah.
And just leave it at that.
Yeah, that was good old days. Back when it was a game. Even in the sport of boxing, everything is highlighted now. The 4704 says, Blue, it was refreshing to see Brady and Manning be bad at something. I actually thought they were pretty good. Brady struggled off the tee early. And, you know, I think you have to have nerves. You know you're on national champ. You know you're on national television. You're playing with Tiger and Phil. So there's going to be some nerves. But I thought is, you know, and listen, I'm the last person to break down anyone else when it comes to golf as far as their swing. I thought his posture was unbelievable. I thought his backswing was very good. I mean, you look at Tom Brady and say, all right, you work on golf full time, I think he'd be a pretty decent golfer. I really believe that. He got better as the round went on. Peyton Manning, that swing's a little bit unorthodox, but, you know, for the most part, He's fairly accurate. So I don't, you know, it's, I understand the point here. I mean, when you mention Brady and Manning, you're talking Super Bowl rings and the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. And, you know, for weekend hackers like me, yeah, you like to see the very best struggle every once in a while. And in the case of these incredible athletes, to see that it's not as easy for them as it, you know, as perhaps we would think it would be. A lot of these former athletes are outstanding at golf. Brady probably doesn't play much. I'm just guessing. First of all, he lived in Boston, right, where it's cold there 11 months a year. And, you know, Peyton Manning now plays quite a bit. Manning's a better player than Brady. But I just thought Brady's look was pretty good. And, you know, that backswing, man, it was unbelievable. I mean, how, if not overextended, great posture, as I said a little bit earlier. I thought Brady had the look as a good golfer, a guy that, you know, if you gave him a teacher and worked with him, he'd have a chance to be pretty good. And I'm not saying that he's, you know, going to be on the Champions Tour one day or anything like that. No, but he could be a single-digit handicap. He could be an 8 or 9. You know, he could be posting 80s, hopefully shooting a 78, 79 here and there. I think that that is absolutely the possibility. Now, he had no clue in how to read a green, but a lot of people don't. And that was, again, it was cool to hear Phil. Wish we got a little bit more of that out of Tiger and Peyton when it came to reading the greens. But, you know, Phil is so daring. I love it. You know, the drivable par 4, he actually just barely missed the pin and rolled off the back of the green. Tiger was a fairway hitting machine. Greens and regulation. His putting was solid, even on 18. You know, that long lag putt left it just a couple of inches away. So we'll see what's next. I mean, we talked with Russell Knox about this last week. He joined me on Friday, and, you know, the Colonial is right around the corner. Here it is, the 26th of May. That's going to kick off the week of June 8th. We're going to have a live PGA Tour event as early as that week, June 8th. So that's pretty incredible. And then, you know, Tiger was asked about it and just how different it's going to be for him because, you know, typically already would have played the Masters. And remember the PGA Championship, the way that that has moved up. And we'd be getting ready for both Opens. But that has changed this year, as we know. So for those of you who are wondering, and I'm sure there are many of you out there who are, you have the Colonial in Fort Worth coming up in 2 weeks. Then you go to Harbortown in Hilton Head for the RBC Heritage. Then you go to the Travelers Championship in Connecticut. And again, talking with JU's Russell Knox on Friday, he won that event back in 2016. And then you go to Detroit to kick off July, the John Deere Classic out in Illinois the week after. There's some talk that we could have some live golf fans back once we get into the early to the mid part of July. The Memorial out in Dublin, Ohio, that, of course, is Jack Nicklaus's event. You have that coming up. The 3M Open in the Twin Cities. The next major will be August 6th through August 9th. And this year that will be played in San Francisco. So we have the PGA Championship first. That will be the first major that will be played. And then you get, the Masters in November, as we know, will be coming up as well. So it's going to be a different year, no question about it. But, you know, I'm pretty excited about what we're seeing right now, golf-related. And, you know, I hate the fact that the Masters is going to run hand-in-hand with the National Football League, but what can you do about it? I mean, it'll be a different type of Sunday in November where, you know, we pay so much attention to the Masters. It's such a great time because it comes right after the Final Four and the National Championship and the buzz that we're all going through college basketball related, then bam, right there that next week, you get the Masters. And, you know, the golfers who go out there and play year after year are very well-suited in what to expect with that golf course. You know, the years of playing there, very hilly golf course, but the give and take, that's going to totally change now in the month of November. You know, it gets cold here in North Florida in November and December. So I got to believe in Augusta, the same is going to apply. We could have some cooler temperatures. And how's that going to affect iron play? How's that going to affect the greens? I mean, these are questions that we don't have answers to. Forever, the event has been played in the spring. And now we're going to have it late in the fall, really in wintertime. It's going to be in November. So anyway, I enjoyed it over the weekend. Hopefully you did as well. All right, on the other side, Coach Marrone, some numbers on him that I found today that are pretty interesting. Also some stuff on mini camps coming up, the latest from Charles Robinson, what he tweeted out earlier today. And where do we stand now after this particular report, which came out today on Yahoo, or at Yahoo Sports, I should say. There's been some feedback ever since. So if you haven't heard, we'll get into that as we continue to go into the night right here on a Tuesday with Rick Ballew on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, I always got my nose underground when it comes to the world of gaming. Even though I no longer wager, just not my thing. At least not now. I can't promise I won't get the itch again at some point in my life, but I just have none of it now, nor have I in a very, very long period of time. But FanDuel now came out with Coach of the Year, which is really intriguing because Bill Belichick's number one on this list. I don't pay a lot of attention to the Coach of the Year, but I wonder if Bill Belichick's ever even won it. As great as he is, it's kind of expected for him to win the division. And where do they go to 9 straight conference championship games? I mean, sometimes when you're so good, you don't get the award. But he's plus 1,200 right now because he lost his quarterback and he is in a rebuilding process. Mike McCarthy right there with him. Of course, he takes over in Dallas plus 1,200. Well, you go through these 32 coaches and you get all the way down to number 32 and bam, there it is. Doug Marrone, plus 5,000 to be the Coach of the Year. For those of you who don't know what that means, you lay down $100 and Doug Marrone was to win the Coach of the Year, you get back 5,000. I mean, look at that. That is insane. I mean, 5,000. So, you know, when it comes to futures and when it comes to props, I've always, my advice would be this. Let's say you can fool around with $500. Okay. Choose one that you really think is going to win the Coach of the Year. And in that case, it's probably, you know, a guy where you're not going to get great odds. I mean, who do you think, is there a coach right now that sticks out that you think is going to be the Coach of the Year? I don't want to get a divisional team any love. Let's say, just for the conversation, let's say Baltimore's John Harbaugh. And I think it'd be tough for him to win because a lot of people are going to project that Baltimore is going to play in the Super Bowl. So when the expectations are high like that, the chances of you winning the Coach of the Year, like I said a moment ago about Bill Belichick, are pretty difficult to actually hit. But anyway, let's say I have $500 here. I'm going to give 100 on John Harbaugh. Okay? That's one there. That's 2,200 bucks in return. Not a great return, but he is the guy that I'm going to put it on that I really believe there's a chance that I get some payback. So I'm putting $100 on Harbaugh. Now you want to make some cash. Okay? You're looking for teams that did not have a good season in 2019. This is all about bounce back ability. Starting to hear a lot of chatter in Miami. Okay? Miami right now is two a year away. Who knows? Brian Flores is bringing in all these ex-New England Patriots. Are they a playoff team? I think most think Buffalo is going to win that division and that maybe New England's not going away. We'll see. It's going to be Jared Stidham. It's going to be Brian Hoyer as the quarterback for the Patriots. Ugh, that's a tough putt. So I'm going to put a dollar here on Miami because I think that Brian Flores has a chance. I'm actually disappointed in the odds, though. I just gave you that long deal about only pick one that you think can really win it, and I did in Harbaugh in Baltimore. Well, that's plus 2,200 to the dollar. There's not that drastic of a difference with Brian Flores. It's only 2,400. Okay? But I still am going to take him here on a flyer. So give me a hunch on Flores. Now it gets real interesting. Okay? This is where you take three, if you're going to play with $500, that really have big-time payouts here. These are long shots, but this is where it's all about. I'm going to start with Matt Nagy in Chicago. Now, I know around here, that's going to upset a lot of you because of the Nick Foles crap. But it's a very good defense. You have three ex-coaches who have worked with Foles. And if it doesn't work there, you still have Mitchell Trubisky, who's not great. But I still think there's a chance there for the Chicago Bears. And again, I'm not talking about an organization that has to win the Super Bowl here. I'm not. I'm talking about an organization that provides the coach of the year. Now, 8-8 a year ago, you're going to have to win a couple of games in a very difficult division with Minnesota and Green Bay. So I'm going to put it down plus 3,000. The payout is enormous. 100 bucks get you back 3K. Give me Matt Nagy. Joe Judge, you look at New York, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, they won four games a year ago. You have a coaching change in D.C. You have a coaching change in Dallas. You've got the heir apparent, or you've got the remaining Philadelphia Eagles, who are the favorites again to win the NFC, the Eastern Division. But you put it on this man, Joe Judge, who I happen to have a tremendous amount of respect for. If you can double your wins, if you can win seven games, go 7-9, if you can go 8-8, if Daniel Jones evolves, if Saquon Barkley is putting up MVP type of numbers, you're in New York. And that's worth extra to me as far as the attention that you are going to receive from the media. To me, it's a great risk. $100, Joe Judge, he's paying back $3,400. So give me Judge. And it's 100 bucks. Give me Doug Marrone. 5-11 a year ago, or 6-10, excuse me, a year ago. I mean, the expectations right now, the Jaguars are to win 4.5 football games. They are the projected number one team in the National Football League to select Trevor Lawrence number one in next year's draft. everything that you look at, I saw something that was written the other day where they have a 4% chance of making the playoffs. They have a 23% chance of having the number one pick. They are right now in a lot of different polls, in a lot of different power rankings, considered 32 out of 32. What if they find lightning in a bottle here a little bit? What if it happens? Okay, I mean, I'm not setting this up as a playoff team. I'm not setting this up as a go deep into it type of team. But what if everything falls into place? What if they stay healthy? What if Minshew really does improve as a sophomore? And what if Jay Gruden makes a difference here with this offense? And they become an exciting team. And it's one thing to lose when you're down by two or three scores and you're giving 200-plus yards a game on the ground and, you know, you're just not able to do anything. It's another thing if all of a sudden you found a little something. You know, those slow starts. The Jaguars, there was that long period of time where they literally averaged a field goal per game in the first half. A field goal. For the season, 16 games, they averaged 7.4 points a game in the first half. Think about that. That's the average. You went into the halftime break with an average of 7.4 points a game. How in the hell can you win? How did they win six games? So that's going to improve. But again, it's the odds. Now, it's little old Jacksonville out here. No one knows about us out here. All these loudmouths are gone now, like Jalen. Who's going to hear about it? It's a long shot. It's a definite long shot. But in my theory, I'm putting it down for $5K. So here you go. Or $100 to win $5K. So I played with $500. Realistically, I think I have a real good chance here with Flores. That's the one that sticks out. That's my number one play, plus $2,400. So what does it mean? I would end up paying not $100 for the $2,400, but I'm paying $500 because I'm playing with $500. But still, my win back is $2,400. Now let's do the math here. I laid down $5. I'm making $2,400. That's $1,900. That's not a bad play. Okay. I played Harbaugh, plus $2,200. For the reasons I gave you earlier, I think they're going to be projected right there with Kansas City as the team to rep the AFC. Therefore, people will overlook his achievement if that defense gets better and Lamar Jackson is putting up another MVP type of year. Long shot, but there's a chance. And again, it's plus $2,200. Lay down $100 for that $2,200, but in reality, I'm laying down $500, right? $500 to win $2,200. Ding, ding, ding. Let me do the math here. That's plus $1,700. That's not a bad bet. Now we got the wild cards. Nagy in Chicago, plus $3K. Don't love it, but I think there's a chance. I think the national media is going to love a Nick Foles bounce back story. I do. I think Matt Nagy's going to get a lot of attention here. That quarterback position has been dismal forever. Plus 3,000, same thing. Lay down 100 to win 3K. In this case, I lay down 500. Well, you make $2,500. Then I got the long shots. I gave you the Joe Judge one. The payout is just incredible, $3,400. Okay, 100 to win 34. In this case, I'm playing with 500. Still bringing back $2,900. All right. And then finally, we get to Doug Marrone. $100 to win you $5,000. We can go through a litany of reasons why. We can probably go through a litany of reasons why not. Again, little, tiny risk. Major return. This isn't playing stocks, ladies and gentlemen. This is playing futures. This is where the wise guys settle in. And they make some serious cash. I imagine they're spending a little bit more than $100 per. But it's a law of averages, and it's playing the numbers. Okay, Marrone wins. You win it back $4,500. So ask yourself this. How many coaches are you willing to do that with? how many coaches are you willing to play with it in that way, where the profit margin is still worth the stress of an in-game, out-game, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday? Where is your tipping point? How much of your profit margin? I mean, you could play all of these long shots. All you got to do is hit on one of them. I mean, think about that for a moment. I mean, say you want to put $100 on John Gruden, $100 on Ron Rivera, that's $3,400. $100 on Adam Gase, that's $4,400. $100 on Bill O'Brien, that's $4,400. All right, so let's say I just gave you five out of the 32, playing $500. Say you double that and you want to play 10 out of the 32. You lay in $1,000 now. Still, if you hit on one of these coaches, you hit on Zach Taylor at $3,000, you spent $1,000, you're still bringing back $2,000. You hit on Ron Rivera, you're still bringing back $2,400. So the question becomes, are you willing to risk it? You know, if you play nine, if you play 10 at $100 a piece, you know you're automatically going to lose nine of those. You may hit on one, and you can only hit on one. But again, look at the profit margin. You play them with the understanding that all I need is one, and my investment on my return is going to come in if I hit the right coach. But you don't want to waste it all on Belichick, McCarthy, Arians, Frank Reich, those who are, you know, $1,200, $1,400. Again, you lay down that $1,000 and you're only bringing back $200. So you bring back $400. I mean, is that really worth it to you? I don't know. Maybe it is. But you play these later ones and the return is that much more beneficial. Anyway, just again, I don't bet. I don't bet anymore. I don't. But I still love. I love it. I love the way around it. Too much stress. I wouldn't do it. I don't recommend it unless it's for fun. But there are people who build their livelihood around this, and you hear from them on the radio, including the Philly Godfather and the Philly Rooster. They're always last year, the Philly Godfather, what do you have LSU at? 50 to 1? 50 to 1. He had LSU at to win a national title. That's and that's a blue blood. Okay, here that's 50 to 1. We're talking here 5,000 to 1 for Doug Marrone if you get it. What 34 to 1, 3,400 to 1 for Joe Judge. All right, enough of that. That's the theory of it, though, in my opinion. That's the way that you come about it. Playing heavy favorites, you know, if you're going to play Baltimore, you're going to play Kansas City, you're going to play New Orleans, you're going to play Green Bay, you're going to play Tampa Bay, you're not going to get a lot in return. You got to find, you know, a team in. That's the beauty of it. If you're doing it that way, I would recommend playing one or two of those highly ranked teams and then looking for someone else that's going to make a run. Look at San Francisco. What were they, 4-11 a year ago? Right? Or 4-12? They went from 4-12 to 13-3. Can you find a team like that? And if so, who is that team? That's how you end up making the most money. All right, more coming up. Again, a little bit more here on the reopening of the facilities. That story that came out today on Yahoo, which I want to share with you because I think it's the best bit of information that we've heard yet as far as the return of players and coaches, although the National Football League Players Association did respond to that. If you don't know what I'm talking about, good. I'll share it with you.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, with you tonight for another 10 or so minutes. Tomorrow night, 7 to 9, then Thursday, Friday, and Monday, 6 to 8. the Sports Den off on Tuesday nights. They will be back on after Into the Night with Rick Ballew each and every night beginning tomorrow. Someone just asked where the next couple of Super Bowls are. It's actually down the road at Raymond James Stadium this February in Tampa. Remember, a home team has never won a Super Bowl at their home stadium. So this year in Tampa, 2022 will be at the brand new stadium in California, in Los Angeles, actually in Inglewood. 2023 will be back out in Glendale, Arizona. And then 2024 in New Orleans. So next four sites, Tampa, Inglewood, California, Glendale, Arizona, and New Orleans, just for those of you out there who are wondering. All right, today the facility's open here in Jacksonville. They sent a list of everything that they're efforting. Obviously, wearing masks, staying clean, practicing hygiene. That is going to be the case now at TIAA Bank. So today was day one. Jaguar players and coaches not allowed, but members of the Jaguar staff are. A report came out today from Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. I've known Charles for a while. I like his reporting. And he did state that head coaches could return to their facilities as early as next week. Okay, now there's a lot of things that have been said since then. There's been a lot of response, including a letter from the National Football League Players Association, which I'll get to in just a couple of minutes. But, you know, a couple of things to consider here. We, as a country, have not been cleared everywhere. Okay, I know there's been language coming out of New York and New Jersey. I know there's been talk that Texas is going to open things up, that California, with their Governor Gavin Newsom, is getting set to open things up, but they're not at this particular time. So that is still holding some things up. Robinson, during his report today on Yahoo, went on to say that head coaches could return as early as next week, and during the middle to later part of June, there actually could be mini camps. Just blown away by this report. I mean, just think about how quickly things would have moved if that was to come to fruition, either the week of June 15th, or any one of the following Mondays that round out the month of June, that you could actually have mini camps that are starting around the NFL. Now, typically, the window for mini camps are between mid-June and the end of June, and what happens is teams go through that, you know, 6 to 7 week break period where, you know, let's say you wrap up in the first week of, you know, let's say you wrap up June 20th. You go through about a 6 week period where you break for the summer. And then training camp typically starts in late July. You go through those few days of no pads, and then everything really cranks up in very, very early August, including the four preseason games. So, you know, according to Robinson's report, you wouldn't miss out on all that much. You've missed out on the OTAs. You missed out on the rookie minicamp. But getting folks back in under this particular idea, you would still have minicamp, and then you would have training camp beginning at the right time. So that's a cool deal, no doubt about it. However, a few hours later, J.C. Treader, who's now the president of the National Football League Players Association, did state that they absolutely will not put a date on NFL minicamps, that the union has not agreed to anything. This is my opinion only. Started tonight's show talking about the NHL and how they're going to come up, they have come up with a 24-team scenario, pods, where there's six pods, four teams per. The regular season is over. they're going to crank out the playoffs. They still have to agree, their union and the National Hockey League. Then I got to baseball, and I went from the very exciting news about On Ice to baseball, where it's just awful. It's lethargic. It feels like that is going to be the most difficult one out there to try to put together. Football, during this entire pandemic, everything that we have heard of football-wise has been thumbs up. I mean, it has been positive and positive and positive and positive. We haven't really heard anything at all from the players' union. What if they aren't as excited about this as we as fans are? What if they start to play the role of what we're seeing in Major League Baseball? Now, it's a totally different issue in baseball. We're talking about an 82-game schedule. Okay, we're talking about half the season. We're talking about slashing these salaries. They've already gone without a great deal of their salary, and now they're talking about removing, you know, the highest priced guys that make $30 million a year. They may only make $8 or $9 million a year. Okay? We have never heard any of that in football because everything, the way it has been talked about in the NFL, is that we're still going to have a 16-game regular season. Therefore, anything as far as the pay is not going to be an issue. Now, there's been some chatter about next year. What if there are no fans? What would that do to the collective bargaining agreement? Would there be a salary cap that is actually goes through a recession? I mean, it's 198.2 this year. And you got to believe with the way that that cap works yearly that it would be increased to 205, 206, 207 million dollars, $207 million next year. But, you know, we talked about it with Andrew Brandt next week. If owners are really going to lose $3 billion, $4 billion, $5 billion, they're not just going to take that hit. They're going to take some money from the players. So, you know, we could see next year's salary cap in 2021 be reduced by $40, $50, $55, $60 million per team. That's the only issue that we've heard. And that hasn't really been thrown out there or talked about with anyone directly in the league. That's just the media's, those in the business world of the NFL, they've penned those articles, including Andrew Brandt, who, again, we talked with last week. I thought it was very, very good. But we've yet to hear that the players won't show up on time. The NFL just can't say players are back without the agreement from the National Football League Players Association because of the concerns when it comes to testing. So it was an interesting Tuesday. You know, good report by Charles Robinson, but again, the president of the Players Association, J.C. Treader, kind of held up the not so fast. Let's wait till we have more results. Let's wait a little bit longer to see what we are going to be able to do here. But anyway, I thought it was a good day for the NFL, and I thought it was a good day for the NHL. I wish I could say the same with Major League Baseball. The NBA, you know, they're talking as well. So, you know, even late last week, I thought we heard more positive things really for the first time coming out of college football. And, you know, we're getting more and more of this. NASCAR, made-for-TV golf events. You know, we got another UFC coming up this weekend. We have NASCAR coming up this weekend. We have the start of the PGA Tour. I guess I really should say it'll resume the week of June 8th out at the Colonial in Fort Worth, Texas. So we are. We're getting closer, and that's a good thing. All right, tomorrow with you from 7 to 9, and, you know, we'll have more on hopefully this. This becomes, you know, the most important story now involved with the National Football League. You know, I read it earlier today, a couple of different owners, we're going to have a season. There's been no Kirk Herbstreets here in the NFL. Everyone you hear from is telling us that there is going to be a season. We just need to figure out how everything's going to be done in a way to keep the players and everyone else around the team and hopefully the fans safe. But, you know, I think every day it's getting better as opposed to flatlining or, you know, getting worse. At least that's the way I've looked at things so far. All right, that'll do it. Thank you to R.J. Saunders for producing the program. And again, the Sports Den will be on after us coming up tomorrow night. As always, they are off on Tuesday, but back at it on Wednesday. So tomorrow night, 7 to 9 as well. We will be with you Thursday and Friday night, as well as Monday night from 6 until 8. The producer of the program is R.J. Saunders. My name is Rick Ballew. Talk with you tomorrow at 7 o'clock.